So I will turn the rest of the program over to my co-host, Laurette Dubé, and to Rebecca Fuhrer. I'm not sure how things will proceed, so I'm...
Promise, we won't keep it here until midnight. I just want briefly, if you remember when we started this morning and I said, if all the brain and the money that we invest in knowing more of the gene and the brain does not serve us to put health as part of the DNA of modern society, we will have missed something. And that is very much the philosophy of the brain to society, is that there is science in society, there is science in brain, and there is also complexity and system science that allow us to see both in need of alignment, and to do so not theoretically, not just in the lab, but to do so woven into real life, real world action. And I think somewhere in the documentation you have this description of what we call the brain to society roadmap that we have articulated over the last couple of years, the last year in fact, which is a portfolio of about 8 complementary projects that goes to fMRI and the development of more sophisticated endophenotype to capture the biological diversity that is out there, and to identify and shape, hopefully, all those complex pathways in a way that we weave in the DNA of society more of this biology that we cannot do as if it's not there. I think that John Coates' speech is the quintessence of what we can get when you bring the knowledge of biology and the knowledge of, in that case, the stock market. I could have talked much longer, but the best use of my time, of the time that we have here, it's about another half an hour, is having you to, we have been working yesterday in design workshop on this parallel, in parallel to those various brain to society roadmap. And we will feature, I believe, 3 of those, and then we will invite for the closing. And my colleague Rebecca has kindly agreed to moderate a very short presentation.
Thank you very much, Laurette, for the introduction. I'm the chair of Epidemiology, Biostatistics, and Occupational Health and Public Health, and we look to what you're working on here to help inform the interventions and prevention strategies of the future. And I'd like to thank you for inviting me to moderate this session. And as Laurette said, I've learned something about the brain. I've actually learned about the brain, genes, and the endocrine system. So thank you. It's an honor and a privilege, but also a serious responsibility to keep us to the tight schedule that has been going on since 8 o'clock this morning. But I think it's been an interesting, rich, and stimulating program. And so just like the pilot of the delayed flight, let me reassure you that we have strong tailwinds, otherwise known as the delay, and we will be making up the delay and arriving at the gate on time. So with that, I'd like to introduce the first speaker, Dr. Ruth Reber, who is a psychologist and an assistant professor at McGill and at the Douglas Research Institute. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I adore the brave souls that are still here with us. I'm going to talk about a topic that will be very close to your hearts now, which is sleep, and I'm going to try to keep you awake for the next 15 minutes when I'm introducing the Healthy Days and Nights Project, which is a project that we're launching within the context of the Brain to Society. And what I'd like to do is to explain or justify why sleep is actually a very good match to the concept of the Brain to Society. And then I'll justify why actually sleep also has to be an integral part of the mission of the Brain to Society to prevent obesity. And what I'll claim is that children, I'm going to speak about mostly about children, and I'm going to claim that obese children are not only starving for food, but they might be starving for sleep. And after this very brief walk through my thoughts, I'm just going to highlight the current and future directions in this context of applying the Brento Society approach to the integration of sleep to obesity prevention. And I'll take a second to just mention that today is the World Sleep Day, in which we try to encourage everybody to be aware to the important role that sleep plays in our life in terms of our mental and physical health. And I'm convinced that right now you're all convinced that I'm right. So I don't have a difficult job right now. Sleep and the city, or why should we study, why the Brain to Society concept is such a good concept when we try to think about sleep? Well, basically, Brain to Society, in a nutshell, talks about the fact that modern disease is the outcome of a kind of a clash between the way that our body has been designed and our modern lifestyle. And clearly, we all know that our brain evolved in an era where there was light and darkness, there was no artificial light. We actually had an opportunity to take a break and recuperate. Our modern lifestyle, like we see here right now, we're all busy, we haven't had dinner, we're completely stressed, and we have tons of things to do when we go home. We live a lifestyle that forces us to be up and running 24/7, to be completely overstimulated, and this leads us all to be very frequently sleep deprived. Sleep deprivation has significant negative outcomes, and I'm not going to walk through everything, but we all know it. We know that when we're tired, it's hard for us to concentrate, to pay attention, to regulate our emotions. It's also has been shown to have significant negative impact on our physical health, on our immune system, cardiovascular functioning, and what's relevant for the discussion today, on obesity. It's been shown to be linked to obesity. So in terms of this Brain to Society concept, we can definitely see how physiological, behavioral, and cognitive vulnerability that will be manifested in processes that are dependent on sleep, and this is everything that I just mentioned in the previous slide, so it's quite a few processes, interacting with the human-made environment, which is our lifestyle, that goes 24/7, leading to significant negative consequences. So this is the concept, and this is the conceptual justification of looking at sleep from this perspective of Brain to Society. Going back to obesity now, shifting perspectives and trying to convince people here that sleep is actually a significant factor that has to be factored into the effort to prevent obesity, I'll just mention a few facts. Well, we know that the epidemic of childhood obesity is a significant and serious problem, and it's been increasing over time. Between 2004 to now, the past 6 years have led to an increase of 20% in the prevalence of childhood obesity, and now we're talking about 37% of young children who would meet the definition of overweight and obesity. At the same time, we know that there is kind of similar epidemic of inadequate sleep deprivation. And if we just zoom on children and adolescents, we know that 45% of adolescents are sleep deprived, 40% of elementary school children are sleep deprived, and the numbers are higher for adults. So this is a very prevalent phenomena. We also know that in the past several years, we have seen a decrease in the amount of sleep that we're getting and a decrease in the percentage of obese individuals. And these trends are pretty much a reflection of each other. So there might be something in our lifestyles that has to do with this changes in our eating habits, in our sleeping habits, and I'm going to argue that these two processes are interrelated and therefore should be studied somehow in relation to each other. When we're talking about obesity, and you're all here know everything about obesity, I'm not an obesity person, so I don't have anything to say except that perhaps we should see what is missing in the way that we have looked at obesity. We know that during the day we have looked at the eating habits of children and adults, at their sedentary behaviors, the fact that people do not exercise as much as they need, their genetics, their brain. So why and where does sleep fit into this picture? So what we know is we know that the effect of sleep deprivation in the context of obesity is actually very serious. We know that sleep deprivation leads to decreased leptin. We know that it leads to increased ghrelin. And we know that these two are, of course, risk factors for obesity. We also know that it leads to increase of insulin resistance. So together we see that the very the mechanism that have been shown to be linked to obesity are very much related to sleep deprivation. We also know what we don't do when we're tired. I doubt that anybody here is going to leave and just go to the gym And even if it was on your agenda today, you're not going to make it because you're too tired. You just simply don't have the energy to drive to, go to the parking lot, change your clothes, and go on the cardio machine. And this is what happens to everybody. When we're tired, it's really hard for us to be physically active. So the combination of altered metabolism, decreased physical activity, of course, two significant risk factors for obesity. And it's been shown in a relatively recent poll in adolescents that 32% reported they were pretty much too tired to go to the gym to exercise. And of course, when we're also staying a little bit longer awake, not only that we don't go to the gym, but we keep eating even more. And many times our food choices are going to be the wrong ones. So again, you can see how these things could be very much interrelated. I really like the presentation of Dr. Levitan, who talked about how emotional regulation or difficulty in emotional regulation leads to increased eating. We know that sleep deprivation affects first and foremost our mood. And if we have a hard time regulating our moods when we're tired, we're going to grab another snack and to cheer ourselves with another nice, sweet snack. So again, you can see that there are many, many ways by which sleep deprivation could lead to increased consumption of food, decreased physical activity, and altered metabolism, three significant risk factors for obesity. So very, very briefly, we can talk about sleep deprivation leading to alterations in metabolic profile, appetite dysregulation that would lead us to changing our eating behaviors, that would lead us to increased energy intake. And when we're sleep restricted or tired, we're not going to be happy. It will affect our mood. And our impulse control is going to, again, change our eating behavior. It's going to reduce our physical activity. It's going to reduce our energy expenditure. And altogether, it's going to lead to increased BMI. And this is what we know. There is so much more that we don't know. And what we have done what we did yesterday, we had a great design workshop. And we think that this is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the interplay between sleep and eating. There are some fundamental basic mechanisms that are interrelated in terms of the regulation of sleep and eating that should be further examined. So the goal of this project that is going to be integrated into the Brain to Society is to start from the basic and go towards the more applied work in terms of identifying basic mechanisms that might underlie this interplay between sleep, mental health, and physical health, identifying the aspects of obesity that are most vulnerable to sleep abnormality, and potentially amenable to sleep-related interventions. The good news about sleep is if lack of it makes it so bad, perhaps if we can get to improve it and get more of it, we can reverse some of these outcomes. And this is actually the positive, the good news within this bad news. And what we hope to do once we've identified mechanisms and knowing what we want to target is to use this information to transfer the knowledge to the community so that we can actually go out there and assist in the effort to prevent childhood obesity. The way that we want to do it, we would like to build on existing programs and to integrate physical activity, healthy eating, into the effort to prevent sleep deprivation. And this is the work that I've been doing in the past 2 years. I've been working on identifying mechanisms that by which sleep affects different daytime consequences, identifying the domains that will be mostly vulnerable, but at the same time, potentially amenable to sleep-related interventions, and then do act on what I'm preaching, which is transferring the knowledge. We have created a program. It's called Sleep for Success. It's being implemented right now in schools in Quebec. And as you can see here, what we did, we took all this knowledge and all this science, and we tried to put it in a very nice, engaging way for children. This is our sleep squad. They're all superheroes, and each of them represents an aspect that is very much affected by sleep. And what we do, we use this approach. We have lots of different programs that use a very engaging way. And we go out there and we try to get this message out to the children, to their parents, to their teachers, so that we can actually see an actual changes in their behavior. And I will just want to show you what we're already doing. I know that I have a minute and a half. These are teachers in the Riverside School Board. They're physics ed teachers. and physics teachers in Quebec are the ones who are doing the health curriculum. This was a day in which I presented the program there, and they're all actually very much interested in applying this program that we have developed. And I'll just finish in a very short clip, if I can get it. Thank you. So this was actually taken on Monday, and I apologize in the way that I look there, but despite of the fact
wake up
I don't
call.
Like seeing myself.
Sleep for Success is a special program at the school that teaches kids about the importance of getting enough shut-eye.
It seems children in Quebec aren't getting enough of it, and the risks are serious. As Camille Ross reports, a few simple changes can help.
So you can go to the first page.
Class may be on, but many of these students are feeling pretty off.
Really tired because I went to bed late.
What were you doing?
Watching TV.
I was up late until 11 o'clock.
Sleepy students are becoming a problem. Researchers at the Douglas Mental Health Institute hope to put the issue to bed before it gets any worse. They've designed a sleep awareness program and plan to make it part of the school curriculum in Quebec and beyond.
Making small modifications to bedtime, changing a little bit their sleep environment, changing what we call sleep hygiene, which is the behaviors that will promote good sleep.
Through special comic books and activities, students learn about the consequences of going to bed too late. Mrs. Grunefeld says the problem is getting worse.
There are students who chronically come in late that are running behind everybody because they had trouble getting up and getting organized.
Researchers say TV distracts children instead of calming them down.
Usually I watch TV, and then once my show's over, that's like a signal for me to go to bed.
Usually around like 9:30, watching TV in my room.
Sleep deprivation can do a lot more than just impact a student's performance in class. It can also have a negative impact on their overall well-being.
Sleep deprivation has been shown to increase obesity rates. It's been shown to lead to metabolic diseases, to cardiovascular diseases.
To stay healthy, children should get about 10 hours of sleep. Parents are warned to avoid schedules that are too full.
Make sure that you keep your child's bedtime as a priority when you plan your general activities.
My secret of going to sleep, I usually read a bit because that calms me down, so I'm not as excited when I go to bed.
Tried, tested, and true. Helpful advice that could help revive sleepy students. Camille Ross, CTV News, Montreal.
Canadian astronaut Bob Thirsk paid a visit to the Montreal Neurological...
Thank you very much.
So before we have, can you hear me? Yes? One or two questions. I'd like to ask just for the...
I think we'll skip the question.
Except
that there is burning questions.
Well, I was going to ask the three panel speakers to come up during that time. We can. So Dr. Lee.